So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we'll be diving into Sherlyn's review of the Pixel 6a, Google's latest, like, budget/mid-range phone, I guess more mid-range, and also the state of everything going on Netflix. They just announced that they lost 1 million subscribers, and we'll talk about why that's actually a good thing for Netflix. Before we begin, I just want to shout out to everybody in the UK and Europe, especially Spain and around that area, who are experiencing this crazy heat wave right now. I've been watching the news. I know these countries are not built at all for this heat, so it's particularly rough. I'm not going to do the US thing where I'm like, just get AC. Not everybody has AC. They haven't needed AC for, you know, decades, hundreds of years. So the fact that all of this is changing so fast, is a sign. But also, we have seen heat waves all across the world this year already, like in America, in South America, in Australia, especially in India and the like South in South Asia in general.
And Singapore too, yeah.
Singapore too. So we're actually gearing up for another one that's going to go across the US soon. So this is a big problem, and we'll be diving into like the specifics behind this and what's happening. You know, what is the driving force behind this? We know it's climate change, but we do want to do an episode around this. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll get a good guest to dive into all that stuff. All right, let's move on to our main topic for this week, the Pixel 6a. Sherlyn, you've been spending a lot of time with it. Your review has gone up. What do you think of this phone?
First of all, Google's Pixels A series have been like, over time, become some of the like most anticipated phones each year that's launched at all, just because they tend to like deliver so much for the money. And above all, they deliver like a really good camera experience for the money. So the Pixel 6a though, for the first time, in my opinion, doesn't feel like it should be branded an A series phone. This is just an extension of last year's Pixel 6 line, honestly, because why? You get the same Tensor chip. You get the same design with the two-tone body, the camera bar. You've got the color options are white, black, and sage. And like same long-lasting battery, same performance. The cameras are like slightly less, like hardware-wise, they're less sharp. But you still get a pair of cameras and the quality is still great. There's an OLED screen. The main drawback that the Pixel 6a has is that it's a 60 hertz screen. But it is.
Like you compare it
to the iPhone SE third generation, which is also still 60 hertz. And is a cramped little like
much, much older
analog
design.
Machine. Exactly. Yeah. So like the only other thing you can really compare it to in the US is the Galaxy A53, which was retailing for $450. Now is like available for $350. That thing is like slow as crap. I started testing that recently too. It's so sluggish. So overall, the Pixel 6a just feels like another Pixel 6, but its size, because it's got a 6.1 inch screen, it just feels so much better. It feels like it's not that much physically smaller, right, than the other two, but it is smaller and therefore feels good. So is this something like,
is there, my question is like, is there a reason? I haven't looked at Pixel 6 prices, but usually by now you'll start to see some maybe used or refurbished or on sale. Should people hold out? Like, is there, aside from the high refresh rate screen, like, is there a reason to like hold out for a used Pixel 6 or something compared to this? Like, this sounds like a lot of phone for under $500.
I know it
is.
$450,
right?
Yeah, it's $450. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you can find a Pixel 6 for like, It launched at $599, which is $600. So that's
not that
exactly.
much.
It's not a huge difference at all. If you want, I think, like, I do believe a high refresh rate is worth it. You also get with the Pixel 6 instead of the 6a, you get wireless charging. And storage options, because the Pixel 6a is only available in 128 gigs. There's no like 256 gig model, for example. So there's that. And you get slightly higher water resistance if that's of concern to you. But no, for me, I will say there's an additional camera on the Pixel 6 as opposed to like the 6a and sharper cameras too. So
it's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's reason to upgrade if you want. And different color options if you prefer the peachier options. But I don't know. I feel like we're Google's done a really good job here. This is like the best Android phone for under $500.
That's great. That's great to hear, because I think especially like Android phones, I know a lot of people, the people who don't read and listen to Engadget, just go into their cell phone stores, just like, I broke my phone, I lost my phone, or I just want to upgrade today. They don't pay attention to the news or anything. They just like look around and see what's available. And I see so many people, people in my family and people, you know, within my friend group, who end up with like a crappy LG thing because of just the price, because of just how cheap it is. So I'm glad that this thing is a good price and delivers like good hardware for those people. That's really what it's made for.
I will say though, two things I want to point out before I make another point. So one thing is this still uses the similar like in-display fingerprint sensor on the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro, which people I used to have an issue with because it's slower than Samsung's versions, but I guess if you get used to it, it's not so bad. And then the other thing is, you know, don't forget the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro were plagued with software issues like throughout. So you never know what's going to happen with the 6A, right? It probably will experience some of the...
Have you noticed anything? Because it should be more stable now.
So far, it's not like problematic. I think around when you were setting the phone up, there tends to be some like lag just because it's still, you know, downloading stuff in the background, updating software. So there, you know, there were some issues like that I encountered. Nothing major. I have had it only a week, so I think I should, you know, fill you guys in after a few months being like, how's the software on the 6A now? And then it also runs hot, but I feel like I've noticed this with not just my Pixel 6s lately, but also on an iPhone. I feel like this hot summer is really getting, this heat wave, I guess, is getting to our gadgets. Man. It's like...
It's getting to our gadgets. Yeah, everything. I mean, another thing I'll mention, I remember when I wrote up the news about the Pixel 6a, Google says it's about the size of the Pixel 5. So it's technically, it's actually even smaller than the Pixel 5a was. Like, is this a good compact phone?
It's not. Opinion? It's really, it feels larger, actually. It feels like it's larger than the 5a, the 5. But the 5a was definitely a bigger phone because it was the same.
The 5a was big. Yeah,
it was more of a, like a 6.1 inch screen, and this one also, the 6a, is a 6.1 inch screen, so it's not, I consider a compact phone like under 6 inches. So
under 6, yeah. The 5a was a 6.3 inch 4 display, right? Whereas this is 6.1,
right? But the 5 itself was not different. The 5 was more like maybe like closer to 6, so it's not, I wouldn't call it compact, but it's a good size. Like, it's definitely not as huge as the 6 Pro.
Another thing with pointing out, this is, it's a nice looking phone.
Yeah.
It's a good design. I don't mind the like camera band thing. I think the color options are good. So the, I know, again, people who walk into the store is like, oh, that looks nice.
Yeah.
That looks pretty. And that's within my budget. I feel like good, compelling option, even though it's only $150. I guess, well, no, it's $200. Is it $699?
It was $599. It started.
Yeah. So it's not that much.
Not that much
cheaper,
different.
But most people are not going to do this price comparison or going to be like planning research and reading all the reviews. So just to get something out under $500, I think is impressive. Yeah.
To point out though, there are people who are doing a lot of that research and planning, right? Like I bring up my chiropractor a lot because I'm basically his tech support expert now or whatever, but he's like, hey, why don't carriers like accept trade-ins for Pixels? Like, I believe that there's very little resale value for Pixels at the moment still, and because they're usually launching for hundreds cheaper than the iPhones and Galaxies, the trade-in value for them is, it seems like it's just less, it's lower. And it sucks because if you are a Pixel fan and you're in that ecosystem, you want to trade in a Pixel 2, for example, for the Pixel 6, you don't get anything in exchange. It's just not, I think that's something that holds Google back, keeps Google back from really like just getting more people to buy and stay in their ecosystem.
I will say, I'm just digging around Amazon now. I see a Pixel 6 unlocked 128 gigabytes for $539, which is not, yeah, it's only a little more than this. I do feel like Engadget people who listen to this podcast, people who read our site, you probably want to spring for the extra refresh rate.
I agree.
I think it is, especially for a screen you're going to be watching all the time, higher refresh rates create less stress on your eyes. It's easier for you to scroll up and down, so it gives you less of a headache. If you do a lot of social media scrolling or anything, it's worth it. It's totally worth it, at least for this screen that you're going to be staring at a lot during the day. So there is that.
Also, the 6 and 6 Pro used Corning's Gorilla Glass Victus on the cover to cover the screen to protect it, as opposed to Corning Gorilla Glass 3 on the 6A, which is a little less scratch resistant. And this is a slippery phone. You're going to drop it. It will happen. So, you know, if you're concerned about that, get a case, get a screen protector. But also, if it's a big problem for you, definitely spring for like the Pixel 6, which like Devendra said, is only about $100 more expensive on Amazon right now. I also wanted to, just for fun, the fun experience, the fun side of reviews, I promised our managing editor, Terrence, that this review I would conduct it fully, completely in a gym. I was like, look, I spend all my time in gym now. In the gym. This will be a gym review. Uh-huh. This will be like, how does this phone hold up?
Were you typing on the bike, on an exercise
bike? No, how does that work? No, I just, so I promised and I under-delivered. I just took maybe a couple pictures at a gym I mean, that's another thing people think about is like the durability of your phone. Can it survive being tossed here and there? Like when you're like, just, you know, hyped up on reps and like, just angry and throwing your phone somewhere. Can this survive being thrown? I mean, it is rated IP67. I haven't dropped it a lot. I think it'll be okay, but I think you want to get some protection for this phone. The $450 is an investment, even if it's not the most expensive.
Yeah. Always get a case, folks. Never run your phone naked. At this point, it's just not worth it. Actually, I have an iPhone 13 Pro, and for the first time ever, I also got a screen protector. And I remember when screen protectors were these like ugly plastic things that made your screen feel like garbage. And now it's just like, it's just a layer of glass.
Yes,
it's just
the tempered glass ones. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't tell it's on your phone and like it doesn't hurt the touchscreen at all. So I'm like, my phone is just like fully protected now. And I appreciate that. Please protect your screens. People, you don't want to. I think the one time I really destroyed my phone screen was I can remember the exact sidewalk in Taiwan when we were in Computex and like, just left me with like a big hole in the screen. I had to like use it like that until I got home.
Yeah. So, I remember when Jess Condit broke my Pixel 3 camera because I think she bumped into me or something. And I dropped it on like a show floor booth thing. Yeah. And she was so apologetic. I was like, I can't take selfies anymore, Jess. What are you doing? Speaking of selfies.
What are you doing?
Uh-huh. The camera quality on the Pixel 6a, is like the best out of the lot, right? Like I compared it directly with the iPhone SE, and they both have similar quality pictures except for at night, right? Google is still just superior at night because of night sight, and it's got an additional
iPhone SE has the old camera too. Like that's
exactly
that can't compete.
Well, in daylight it's fine. It actually does well with like dynamic range and shit, but it's better. Like it just doesn't have a night mode, you know? And so Google does better with that. And then it has an ultra wide lens, so you can take landscapes better than you would with the iPhone SE. And then, like I said, the Galaxy A53, it's got more cameras, it's got sharper cameras, and the pictures look fine, but it's slow as hell. Like, you press a button and you'd wait like 2 seconds before it's saved. I'm just like, no.
Yeah. Because Apple does a lot of like picture processing too, and you're basically waiting for that. That's not fun.
The iPhone wasn't so bad, but that was the Galaxy A53 was much slower. The Galaxy A53. Fine.
Gotcha. How is this? How is the selfie camera when it comes to video and stuff? Like, I'm sure all the TikTok fans want to know: is this a good TikTok phone?
It's fine. I mean, I took a time lapse video with it. And I took another like one of those like fitness influencer wannabe videos with it. More from the rear camera than with the front camera. You can get up to 4K, I believe, on the Pixel 6a. I didn't use that because I don't need that high of a resolution. It was fine. It just like I said, it will run hot. And again, I think that's a problem that plagues a lot of devices lately. I have noticed it across the board, not just Apple, not just Google's phones, but Apple's and Samsung's as well. It works. It's serviceable. Do I want to be a TikTok star one day?
I've seen your TikToks. Check out the Engadget TikTok.
Yes, I have an unboxing.
You got stuff from Sherlyn. You've got stuff from me and managing editor Terrence O'Brien. He's over there too. Like we're experimenting. We're doing stuff. I got one of the little lapel mics, and I'm holding it up like a TikTok influencer too, which I think is just as an aesthetic is really adorable and cute. I do wonder if people are going to start like reorienting their phone microphone so they're maybe a little better at picking up like straight ahead audio. I know iPhones are doing, you have a couple options on iPhones now of like capturing all the sound or vocals or something. So, you know, the stuff is going to update. Anything else you want to mention on the Pixel 6a, Sherlyn?
I mean, read the review. It's up on Engadget.com by the time this podcast is live. Check out the video for some like good camera samples. And, you know, I ask me your questions directly. I feel like this was a very straightforward phone to review. There's not a lot of weird stuff to test. So it's not the longest review, not extra detailed or anything, but definitely like come to me if you have any specific questions.
Good mid-range phone. Yeah. I call this mid-range, not budget. Budget is like sub 300 to me. The other question I'm sure people are asking, should I get this? Should I get a used Pixel 6 or should I wait for the Pixel 7?
I know.
What are we, are we expecting October, November timeframe for that?
No. The Pixel 7 is probably October. And I will say this. I think if your budget is a little on the, like, is sub 500, if your budget is less than $500 and you're going to save more money, the Pixel 6a.
Yeah.
Is pretty good. You get that. That's the best you can get for that money. And then if you can spend a little bit more, I would go for the Pixel 6 just because, you know, why, like the screen is better. I don't like the size, but the cameras are better and you get like that wireless charging if you have a wireless charger at home. And then if you can go up to the Pixel 6 Pro, that's what I use all the time. So, and then the Pixel 7, should people wait? I mean,
it's only 3 months.
Yeah.
It's July. It's the end of July. It's practically August. If you can wait till October, I feel like
just
sit tight.
Yeah,
just sit
tight. Exactly. Yeah. Like if you just broke your phone and you can't wait, yeah, get the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. But I think it's worth. I don't know what's coming with the 7. I think we've seen Google tease it at I/O.
Right.
I don't know if I'm excited for it just yet. I'm like, what can you do with it?
Was the 6? Was the Pixel 5 was like, did that introduce the band or did
no,
the
6?
Did the 6 introduce the band? Okay, so that was a big design change. Typically, we expect like every other year when you get major design changes. But, you know, what else? More cameras, more speed, maybe better.
Tensor 2, like, you know, like what?
Tensor 2.
Software, yeah. AI assistant smarts. That's what I'm looking forward to because that's where Google excels. So we'll see. Android 13 doesn't look like it's going to be so much different from Android 12. So I don't know. I don't know what surprises they'll have in store, really. But I know we're going to find out soon enough. So again, if you're not in a huge hurry, if your phone isn't literally dying on you as we speak, you can wait. I think that's probably the best advice.
Let's move on to what's up with Netflix. And Charlene, I got to ask you something. If a company says, we lost 1 million subscribers, hooray! Does that make sense to you?
Little to no sense. But I'll be like, it's a flex. All right,
it's
cool.
You do you, Netflix.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. If you all will remember, back in the first quarter, in April, end of the first quarter, Netflix announced that they lost 200,000 subscribers. And that was like the first ever loss for Netflix. Like normally their company, like all tech companies, we expect to grow forever and ever. But in April, everybody started freaking out because Netflix reported their first loss ever. And they also said, hey, guys, by next quarter, it could be like 2 million. We could lose 2 million people. So their stock tanked. A lot of there's just a lot of hubbub around Hollywood about what Netflix is doing right now. Their stock fell 70% since like last fall. So they are in a rough place. So this week we got their earnings report for the second quarter and they announced almost 1 million subscribers lost. And everybody is cheering because it's kind of a good thing. It's not as it's not as much as they were expecting. Wall Street is happier. The company is happier. But this just kind of shows like what a precarious place Netflix is in. They're talking about, you know, launching an ad-supported tier eventually. They're talking about cracking down on account sharing in Latin America. In general, that's something that could trickle out to everywhere. So no more password sharing, no more sharing Netflix with your entire family. It does seem like Netflix is really cracking down and they want to make money. Because for a lot of these companies, you know, growth was more important than making money. Yep. Sherlyn, like, what do you think? What is happening here with Netflix? Do you have any thoughts about them as a company? Yeah.
I mean, after hearing what you just said, I'm like, wait, is it a good thing that they lost 900,000 subscribers as opposed to the 2 million they predicted?
Yes.
Or is the loss itself the good thing? Okay, so the fact that it's less than they expected is the good thing. But the loss itself in general isn't actually a good thing for Netflix, right? The fact that they're bleeding subscribers.
I mean, I think it's more Netflix is the biggest streaming company by far, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like everyone is saying, and a lot of analysts are saying that they may have just plateaued, right? They've been growing. They've gotten as many people as they can. This is inevitable. I don't know if this is necessarily a bad thing, but it is funny to see like everybody freak out about this. I don't think this means the end of Netflix, but I do think.
I don't think, yeah.
it may end up being the end of Netflix as we know it, right? So what have we seen over the past decade? Netflix just throwing money at everybody, right? Even for smaller projects like something like Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. That movie cost $100 million, but it was ultimately like a small little crime film from him. Now, like, that strategy may shift. Fewer TV shows, things like that. Are you at all worried? Like, where is Netflix in your pantheon of streaming services at this point?
I mean, I think part of the issue is also that, like, Netflix just has so much more competition now as opposed to before. And you're right, like, the joke that I think it was it Bill Burr or someone that I was, like, watching their stand-up of where they say, they describe Netflix as, like, man, I forget the actual analogy, but they're like, you have to sift through so much crap before you find the good stuff, right? And that is exactly what's happening. Like, yes, Netflix is spending a lot of money on a lot of content, but not all of it is good. Where Netflix sits in my so-called pantheon is, it's one of my top three, I want to say. I feel like I do Netflix, and then depending on my mood, it's either like HBO Max or Hulu or Disney Plus. And then I love Apple TV Plus, don't get me wrong. They got really good content, but they don't have as much. They're not like my go-to. It's like sometimes I go to like Prime Video because I'm like, what? I'm at the bottom of the barrel here. Let's look at Prime Video. Let's see what Amazon's got.
There's good stuff. Like I think you're right, Sherlyn. Like, there's just so much competition.
Yeah.
They're all trying to outspend each other too. Like, Apple is just like... Apple has all the money in the world, so they're more selective about it, but they are ready to, like, throw down when they need to for big acquisitions or big talent or something. I just saw the news about Kurt Russell is going to be in the next, like, Godzilla TV show on Apple TV. Like, that is just a flex.
And Wyatt also, Russell. Yeah.
And yeah, Kurt Russell alongside his son. Like, super flex. It's something I know a lot of, like, film nerds right now. I really like Wyatt Russell. I think he's a really good personality, and he kind of embodies both kind of the both elements of his mom and his dad. So, you know, just kind of fun to see that pairing there. But yeah, there's just so much to see. I think about it when, like, I just don't hit Netflix that much. You know, like, occasionally my daughter will want to see Avatar The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra or something. But in terms of, like, new stuff and new shows, like, I am more on... HBO Max quite a bit. I am on Amazon Prime a lot. I'm certainly on Apple TV Plus. And another thing I just started diving into is AMC Plus, which is their streaming service, and a thing that annoys me too. There's just so many options out there. Do you think an ad-supported tier is going to be a helpful thing, or is that kind of a step backwards for Netflix?
I honestly don't know. Because I don't know the market of people who are out there. Like, then this is my privilege to say that, like, I don't share an account with anyone. I don't, like,
I think that just says a lot about your personality, Sherlyn. So it also says,
I'm very, like, control freaky, right? Like, I just, no one on my account. But the fact that that's my perspective tells me that, like, I'm not the sort of person that would go considering, like, an ad-supported Netflix tier. But I bet there's people out there who would, like, access and wouldn't mind some of the ads. I just think it would depend on how Netflix priced it, right? Like, how cheap is it going to be? I think anything more than $5 a month for an ad-supported tier would be too much. That's my thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And what if I feel like the blowout news would be Netflix is just like, hey, free. These shows are free, like that water would be with ads.
Honestly, do you
and
think
that's they- what I think it's a possibility, right? Because Roku is doing that, and I've talked with Roku quite a bit. They have this thing called the Roku Channel where there's a ton of TV shows, a ton of movies, and every 15, 20 minutes you have to watch an ad. It's like a short ad, like how YouTube used to be. It's super popular. A ton of people do it because people just want to, like, put on something and, like, have it on the background.
Background.
They're not actively renting. They're not actively, like, binging a show or something. So it kind of makes sense to me. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you in the sense that, like, I also watch some IMDb TV sometimes through Prime Video. Yeah. And it's
just now
more
called Freevee. Freevee.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mostly go to it for content that's not available elsewhere. And I'm like, all right, I'll suffer through the ads to watch it. But I also see that, definitely. Like, Hulu used to be free with ads. And I used to like Hulu free with ads. And then started paying for it and just never looked
back.
Was
it free? I forget if it was purely free.
It used to be. Yeah, okay. It used to be.
I remember it was
way
like really
when.
Cheap with ads back then. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, do not be surprised, folks, if Netflix ends up just saying, "Hey, it's free." We saw some news saying that maybe not all of their shows would be on the free ad-supported tier. I'm thinking maybe it's just Netflix branded content too. Like, maybe it's just their stuff and not the things they license from other people. They certainly have enough content to support that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do. I want to point out that in our chat on the YouTube live stream, Mark Dell, one of our regular commenters, contributors, said Squid Game happened somewhere between 5 years and 5 weeks ago. I'm not able to judge time anymore. Good point. But also, didn't Netflix have like a huge boom during the pandemic, or am I imagining that?
I mean, Netflix and all the streamers did.
Everyone
too,
else, right?
Yeah, you're right. That is a good point, Mark Dell. Like, Squid Game was, what, last year? How quickly things change, right? Like, time means nothing. It's more like, hey, everyone can celebrate all these things and all these shows, but you lose a couple hundred thousand subscribers, and then all of a sudden, everyone's like, your business is burning. Everything's on fire. So there's a fickleness to Hollywood and to the tech world as well. I think that's what
you're
saying a bit about.
And we're still riding the high of Stranger Things season 4. I mean, like, people are still really hyped for Netflix content, no?
People are hyped. I'm not one of those people.
I'm fine.
I don't care about Stranger Things, but it is one of those shows because it is such in the zeitgeist that I will probably just put it on in the background at some point and just like see what's happening. You know, there is that. The other thing is we learned the plans of how they're going to be cracking down on content sharing in Latin America. Several countries there. They're going to be making people to start paying per household or per home. So they're going to do more to like basically detect like where you're watching stuff on TV. You'll always be able to watch Netflix stuff across like tablets and computers, I believe, and phones anywhere. But when you're logging into a TV account, they're going to be more specific about like, you know, how you're using it. So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work out. I think just ads and maybe a free tier would be a huge thing. They also announced that Microsoft is partnering with Netflix for that ad-supported tier because Microsoft has a lot of good, like, ad-serving technology and experience, at least. So that's a thing. That also sparked a rumor, by the way, that a lot of people are just like, Microsoft is just, like, circling Netflix right now, right? Like, when your stock tanks by 70%, and Microsoft is a company that just also has a ton of money in the bank and can just, like, buy things outright, they're spending how many billions on, like, Ubisoft and everything and Activision. There is just so much Microsoft. Could you envision a world where Microsoft just said, hey, Netflix, just come over here. We'll buy you. Could you see that happening?
They did try to buy TikTok. I mean, Microsoft is all like eyeing the youngs or something. It's smelling the blood in the water. It's like, all right, we could do something with this. I could see it. But I don't know what that would mean. I feel like maybe Microsoft is looking over at Apple TV. Apple's doing well with Apple TV Plus. Right. Google has YouTube and Google TV. Microsoft
But YouTube Originals are nothing. Like, YouTube is so bad at like actually building a service people want to watch.
Google actually is bad at content. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have good content right now. Amazon at least is doing some good stuff with Prime Video. So, I mean, I think if you think about manga, right? You've got Microsoft feeling a little left out, maybe, right? Does Meta have its own content library? No, it's all VR now, right?
I think it is interesting that Microsoft is sometimes just willing to like throw down when they need to, right? They saw Minecraft was being a huge deal, and they're like, okay, we got a bill for you. You know, we got money to buy Minecraft, and that is still growing strong. They bought GitHub, they bought LinkedIn. You know, the Bethesda deal we talked about, Activision is going to be enormous. Like, that is just enormous. So at this point, I don't think Microsoft is afraid of, like, buying things to basically buy a step into the culture. I could also see some really interesting integration between, like, Xbox and Netflix, to be honest. So,
yeah, I mean,
my gears are turning now.
Right. One of the things Netflix was trying was gaming, right? Like, really lame games.
They are, yeah.
Yeah. So I do see that as a fairly natural tie-in, but I don't know. I cannot imagine or speculate for them. I think they have to bring us the news and then we think about it.
I kind of don't trust Netflix with its own business sometimes. Like, I do think so much of this is so much of this company has been a fluke and they've gotten a lot of money, a lot of VC investing. But do you guys remember like when Ted Sarandos and somebody else from Netflix were just like shot a video behind like the building? It was like, hey, we're splitting up the business into the mail DVD business and the streaming business. We're going to call it Quixtar. Quixtar was the thing. And everyone was like, what are you? Why are you doing this? Just stop. And they just kind of backed off from that idea. So, yeah, I don't know if I can trust Netflix on its own either. We will see what happens. We'll be keeping a close eye on all this stuff, folks. Moving on to some other news, the ongoing battle between Elon Musk and Twitter is still going, and it's looking worse and worse for Elon Musk, because his lawyer was arguing that, hey, these folks are trying to like push us into a trial, you know, by this year. We want to wait until next year. No. A judge has granted Twitter an expedited trial. So Twitter's lawsuit against Elon Musk, which is about him basically backing out of the $44 billion acquisition deal, that is going to be happening in October. And I'm sure everybody is going to be paying attention. The less I think and speak about Elon Musk, I feel the happier I am. But do you have any broader thoughts about this, Shirlan? Do you think it is Shirlan?
Oh my God, no.
Oh, no. No. Any broader thoughts about this Shirlan Musk?
God, Lord. First of all, I did receive a very strange DM saying that I look like Elon Musk's sister, so thanks a lot.
You should just close your DMs. Why are your DMs?
They are closed. This is the one on like Instagram where they like block it for you. Yeah. They hide it away, but I get curious.
And you still see it. It's annoying.
I go look for it because I'm a sadistic person. Anyway, no, I think that like whatever justice we can bring to Elon Musk would be great. I do think that I've seen a lot of commentary around Elon Musk's like, I don't know, he went swimming somewhere or something. I saw a lot of people like body shaming the guy. I'm just like, all right, well, I agree. I get it when y'all don't like a person and their actions and their behavior, but I don't know. I just feel like making personal attacks about a person's appearance is just never cool. Yeah. So yep. that's my main takeaway.
I will say straight up, that's not cool. But also, I'm not inspiring much sympathy for Elon Musk. So whatever, don't do it, folks. Don't body shame.
I don't feel sympathy. Just, I just am like, yeah, let's you just, make let's a stronger argument if you're not attacking someone for their physique. That's all.
Absolutely. You know? I saw a lot of dumb memes around that. I'm not even talking about that stuff. I'm just saying, like,
I know.
This guy is clearly was trying to troll everybody with this deal. We've talked about it already, and. I do want to see like some justice given here, but also, as we mentioned before, like I also Twitter like fully fell into this. They knew what they were doing. Like you knew who you were dealing with. So Twitter's board and executives, like everybody who kind of okayed this deal.
There's just like no skepticism anywhere. Mm-hmm. It felt like, yeah, it's funny. Mm-hmm.
I think they were just like, they saw that number. They're like, yeah, sure. Whatever. Our life's work. Let's just, sell it to this, this crazy troll. So anyway, we'll be keeping an eye on this story. Shirlan, you had some news about Samsung's next Galaxy Unpacked, your favorite month of the year, August, God. When Samsung dumps a lot of news.
When you say favorite month of the year, you mean the part of the year where my entire life just become a mess of like launch events and phones.
It's also the time of the year I try to leave, so I don't.
Yeah.
So I don't have to even think about this stuff. Yeah.
Every year for the last few years now, August kicks off basically fall gadget season, and we're starting with Galaxy Unpacked. Samsung's officially announced it. It'll be happening August 10th at 9 a.m. Eastern, because they want to kill me, because 9 a.m. Eastern? Are you kidding? So anyway, it's going to be virtual only, and we will be streaming it here on the Engadget YouTube channel as well, and it will be myself and most likely senior editor Sam Rutherford will be co-hosting with me. We will just be pre-watching or pre-gaming together with y'all at 8:30-ish.
How are you pre-gaming? Like, what are you drinking?
Probably copious amounts of coffee, just like my body weight worth in coffee. And then after, Samsung is done, we will have a post show to answer questions about what they've announced and very potentially could have surprises for everyone. So I would just say, mark your calendars, come join us. It'll be a fun time.
Look under your seats. You may have gifts, everybody, watching and listening.
Yeah, free air for everybody. Free air. Mm-hmm. Speaking of devices, Samsung's expected. So what do you think? What do you think Samsung's going to like unveil, Devendra? If you had to guess.
I don't know. Too many damn phones. It has been a while since we've gotten some more major foldable news from them. So I do feel like if Samsung wants to steal, August is a good time to steal some publicity thunder away from Apple, because everyone's like waiting, what is the next iPhone stuff going to be? More foldables, I think. Like, yeah. Samsung just puts its fingers everywhere. So yeah, more foldables.
Exactly. The rumor, and I think this is pretty, like a very educated guess, is more like this is the fourth generation of the foldables. So we're likely to see the Z Fold 4, the Z Flip 4. We're also expecting to see a pair of smartwatches, the Galaxy Watch 5, and like maybe a 5 Pro model is the rumor. And then Buds 2 Pro, Galaxy Buds 2 Pro is that like other thing that we're kind of expecting to see. So a lot of hardware seems to be coming.
Yeah. Has Samsung announced a foldable tablet yet? Because I know we saw one from Asus and that was going to be coming. Yeah, and Lenovo. Right. Yeah.
Well, so Samsung, if you think about the Z Fold 4, that's kind of like a phone and a tablet.
Yeah, that's cheating. That's cheating. I'm bigger. I'm thinking bigger.
You want a bigger screen. They haven't announced anything like that.
Yeah, we've talked about this. I think Samsung is the only like good premium Android tablet maker. Like they've been doing it forever, pretty much almost a decade now. I do remember seeing like the Galaxy Tab S2 or whichever one they started throwing OLED in. And it was like, yeah, it looked better than the iPad at the time. They have a lot of room to do some interesting stuff with tablets, like less phones, more interesting pocket devices too. Like if they, I could see Samsung looking at the Surface Neo that we talked about from Microsoft and just being like, huh,
yeah,
I could just make that with a foldable, like not even the hinge, but just like do a foldable screen, get a little like magnetic keyboard for a pocket PC type of thing. That could be interesting. I want to see something cool and interesting from Samsung, and hopefully not just more phones. So that's what I'm excited for. Yeah.
Reminder that like earlier this year, Samsung's big tablet move was to introduce the Tab S8 Ultra, which was like a 14-inch tablet with very high-end specs, and the first 14-inch Android tablet to have a 120Hz refresh rate. So that's what it was doing at the time. I think it knows its strength lies in display, so it's going there. But I do think it probably is just kind of watching and waiting to see how people take to devices like, the Asus foldable gaming tablet, and Lenovo just is struggling. But I think Lenovo's issue is more on Windows being not a good OS for foldables or even touchscreen devices.
Not great for touchscreens. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
If I were Samsung, and I'm sure like, they probably saw your coverage of the Surface Neo and everything, Shirley, and were like,
yeah, sure.
We have foldable screens. We can make this happen. We saw the Surface Neo, 3 years ago at this point? So if Samsung wanted, that's probably never coming. But if Samsung wanted to like deliver a competitive product or steal some thunder from Microsoft, now would probably be the time to do it. So let's place some bets, folks. Let's see what Samsung produces. Send us an email at podcastandgadget.com. I'd love to know your theories, too. And we could talk about these ahead of the show, too. Let's move on to some other news. And something we missed last week that I just wanted to shout out is the Uber files. Do you remember seeing this story, Sherlyn? I think it was Sunday. It was like July 10th.
Yeah, it was the weekend. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing the headlines. I was just too burned out to read anything. So what happened?
The Guardian dropped something called the Uber files, which a leaker, a high level executive, I don't have their name right now, but that person shared 124,000 internal company documents that showed just like the extent to which Uber went to grow across the world. And a lot of it involved flouting local laws, doing crazy tricks, doing things when they weren't allowed to in certain countries, and just like being very bold about it. There were also things like, I believe when Paris taxi drivers were protesting and people were worried about the safety of their drivers, there were messages about the CEO being like, violence could be good for us. It could be make people more sympathetic towards Uber. So there's a lot of like gross stuff here.
Yeah.
That's basically an instance where they were weaponizing drivers. I also think a lot of we didn't know this stuff specifically, but we also know like Uber was not a great company when it blew up. Like they did a lot of rough things. There were stories about them basically sabotaging some competitors too, like ordering Lyfts and not like not taking them, like just to get them off the road in a certain sense. So there's a lot of like weird stuff. The God's Scummy. Eye view Uber had at times. Do you like at this point, we are living in a world where you have to take cabs often, I'm sure, Sherlyn. Like, do you use Uber? Do you prefer Lyft? Do you have like other methods that you use rather than these companies?
I do use Uber. I do have Lyft installed. Do I use Uber more often than Lyft? Yeah. I have become a little locked in, right? Because in part, I have like all my, like the payment information that I usually use for my expensed rides is all in there. It's easier. It's easier to expense my rides if they're Uber rides because our system just ties up with it. The Lyft rides are often cheaper. Yeah, the rides are often cheaper on Uber compared to Lyft. I don't know. It's a lot of things, right? I used to, so back in the day when it was starting to come out that Uber was a very scummy company, I was trying to switch over to Lyft. But it just was so infuriating because back then, and this was at least 6 years ago, the Lyft app was just awful. Yeah, it was just very bad. And Uber was just a better experience.
The maps were worse. The directions were worse on Lyft, like a whole bunch of things.
Yeah.
I do remember reporting, like, I'm old enough to remember a world before Uber, and I was reporting on Uber and Lyft when the startup, the rise of this generation of startups happened. It was like 2010-ish, like when I really started doing tech reporting, and Uber was so cool. It like, especially if you lived in New York or a major city, it was like you hit a button, a car comes right to you. No, like, staring down the road and hoping you see a cab with a light on, or calling a car service and hoping they actually come to you and you have no way of like tracking them or something. So I think it was life changing for a lot of people, but the tactics of these companies just really grossed me out seeing it at the time. I will say I try not to use Uber at all just because of like all the reporting I've done and have seen about this company. I try to go for Lyft, but Lyft has its own issues too. You know, there's a large group of women who are suing Lyft about basically not doing much to protect them against sexual assault during rides too. So it's kind of rough with all these companies, but I want to shout it out because, hey, this is a big deal. Maybe something will actually happen for Uber because the Uber file show, like they had high-level friends. Basically, I believe Macron was like a big help to them before he started leading France. Like, and other people in other countries like helped Uber get around certain restrictions, helped give them a push in those countries. There's a lot of like just bad behavior Uber did to grow. So I think it's worth talking about. I also feel like this is going to be a thing where everyone's gonna be like, oh man, that's so bad. And next week, there's gonna be some other news, and we're all gonna forget about. So I don't know. I have little faith in us actually following this news, but there's something here. Let's move on to some other news. What do we got? You have some Snapdragon smartwatch for me?
I mean, let's move straight on to gadget hardware news. Qualcomm has announced a pair of new chips for Wear OS devices. These are the Snapdragon W5 and W5 Plus Gen 1 chips. And we all know how well the Snapdragon Wear 4100 did. That's the thing about that. And I'm trying to explain my tone a little bit here, right? I just am so burned from past experiences with Qualcomm and
everything
Wear OS.
Qualcomm says. You can't trust them. Yeah.
Where they're just kind of like, oh, this thing's going to be great. And like, it's not necessarily their fault that their promises don't come to them because they have to work with OEMs. They have to work with like software people to make to fulfill these promises that they're saying, you know, they're making, because they can promise all the speed bumps or increases that they want, all the features that they will be able to support that they want. But if it's never implemented well by the OS or the equipment maker, then it's never going to happen. So anyway, I say that just to couch kind of what I'm saying with a little bit of a grain of salt, but also like, if you can tell that I'm a little like just tired of it already as I'm talking about this, it's because
I'm tired of Android smartwatches in general. So
right. Well, there's still some hope yet. We never know. Anyway. So the W5 Plus, the Snapdragon W5 Plus, which, by the way, they're moving away from that Wear branding and the naming anyway. So it's jumped from a 12 nanometer SoC design to a 4 nanometer design. So
they were using 12 nanometers on a smartwatch chip?
Yeah, that's how old. I know.
Wow. What?
Don't even, okay. Yeah. So yeah, I know. So 4 nanometer, and which means it will have a lot of better like power efficiency benefits and all that stuff. So smartwatches with it might last a lot longer than one or two days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's also going to be twice the performance with 50% greater battery life in typical use is what Qualcomm is saying. And apparently you can support 3D interfaces on your watch.
Sure.
Maps and stuff like, yeah, no, this is exactly what I've been waiting for on watches. Right.
It's funny. Whenever I go through a Qualcomm presentation or something, I do kind of turn into the, the Mentat from Dune. It's just my eyes glaze over and go wise.
I know mine a little bit too. I know.
New features. Fast charging, more efficient. Okay. Sure. Show me when it's a shipping product, please. On phones, we heard about Qualcomm rapid charging for years, and it took a long time before anybody actually took advantage of that. So yeah, okay. This sounds cool. More smartwatches, more better Android smartwatches.
According mm-hmm. to Qualcomm, Oppo and Mobvoi are both making watches with these new chips, and then there are 25 more designs on the way at least. So good for them, I guess. More Android Wear watches are coming. More Wear OS watches are coming, and they'll be using the Snapdragon Gen 5. W5 Gen 1 chip. So we'll see.
I do wonder, one thing I have noticed, I started wearing my Apple Watch more after I recovered from COVID, just to be have my vitals changed at all? Has anything changed? And I did notice that my resting heart rate was a little higher than it used to be. Maybe I'm just tired whenever I'm doing it, or a little more anxious. I do wonder, as we are dealing with the effects of long COVID and other things, hey, monkeypox is a thing that's mm-hmm. happening all over the place. I think as more and more people are interested in actual health tracking and seeing how am I doing? Am I okay? Should I be on alert? I do wonder if smartwatches, especially really good ones with good health sensors, could help us in that respect. If a smartwatch could detect your skin temperature changing dramatically, hey, by the way, take a COVID test. I'm feeling something weird here. That they have the capability. I'd love to see companies kind of do more stuff like this. So we'll keep an eye out. Let's move on to some other stuff. Alienware announced their refreshed M17, the 17-inch R5. Gaming laptop. I believe it is the first laptop I've seen with a 480 hertz display.
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. With a, it's gonna have better cooling. I mean, it looks like an Alienware 17-inch laptop. I don't usually test these because these are so huge and they're for very specific gamers. I also wonder. I know a lot of super fast gamers are waiting for the days when we hit 700 hertz or something, the point where refresh rates just basically match up with how we see the world.
Yes, your
real
eyes,
life.
Yeah.
I guess this is one step towards getting there. Personally, I cannot tell a difference between 120 hertz and 240 hertz. And as we keep going up and up, it's just diminishing returns. But some people live by 360 hertz screens. This is a good thing. This is a good step up. I think more interesting news is Dell announced the new G16 gaming laptop. And G is their budget line. And I really like this line because it's cheap. It usually packs in a lot of power. It's great for students. This thing it's a 60-inch gaming laptop. It's going to have 12th-gen Intel CPUs, RTX graphics, of course. And it's going to start at $1,400 for a 16-inch gaming laptop. That's pretty good. The specs aren't going to be the best at that price range, but hey, good start. Let me see. You have a RTX 3050 Ti, 3060, and 3070 options. I love recommending these when I do the laptop guide for students and for school. I love recommending the Dell G series because it is cheap. It's very, very utilitarian. It's not the most attractive thing around. But boy, if you need power and you're on a limited budget, these are good computers to go for. So, yeah, cool to see the G16 coming. Sherlyn, you also want to talk about new maps from Instagram?
Yeah. Instagram continues to stuff more features into its already bloated app that refuses to make a version for tablets. But anyway, they've launched this week a map, some new map features. It now supports the Instagram map now supports searches and filters, so you can actually use it to find businesses around you or other hotspots within the app as opposed to seeing just where the photos were posted. So like, for example, if you search now in Instagram, you can do like a map search, right? You can see like where this photo was taken or like all the pictures that were tagged at the Singapore Marina Bay Sands Hotel with that spaceship looking thing, all of the photos that were taken there. Instead of doing that, you can now like just look up businesses around a place, which AKA Yelp meets Google Maps, right? Like it's just,
Or like Foursquare. To be honest, like Foursquare was a thing, and I remember that. Yeah, it was a thing. I still occasionally like pop in there. I still check in on Swarm, you know, just for the old days, like for the thrill of being in a place that's not my home. I still occasionally do a Swarm check in, but when I was traveling, like I guess like after Foursquare launched and everything, like it was a great way to be like, my first time in Barcelona was like 2012. It was far more useful for finding like, hey, this place is good, this tapas place is good, avoid this bar. It was more useful than Yelp. It was more useful than other services.
Than maps, yeah.
A lot of, yeah, than maps. So, hey, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
It's 10 years after all those apps and Foursquare, you know, Yelp, Instagram has it. Great.
I will say that this is like very fitting for the generation and times that we're in, right? Because why? A lot of people, when they travel or when they're looking for like restaurants, they're looking for the most Instagram friendly experience, right? And so like, where else to find the most Instagrammable locations than Instagram itself, I feel. So it kind of makes sense. This move is not like a complete, it's, like,
should have been there. It should have been there years ago. It should have been there like straight up 10 years ago. So, okay, sure. Fine. Great. Good job. Good job, Instagram. There needs to be, we need to do a piece or just like a rant about like, yeah, what a disaster Instagram has become. Like as soon as I launch it, suggested posts, ads, suggested posts. You can quiet the suggested posts for a month, but why? Why are you making it so hard for me to do anything?
Yeah. And then sometimes my chronological posts disappear. I also like read reports on Reddit or whatever about a bug where people have to keep rewatching their friends' stories to see their new stories and stuff like that. Yep. It's like ridiculous.
Is this, I see people pointing out this looks like a Snap Map ripoff. Is it?
It's nothing. I mean, sure. It's not a lot like the Snap Map. To be fair, I didn't use the Snap Map for a lot other than stalking my crushes way back when. But the Snap Map was more for like heat maps, right? Like where were people's Bitmojis on the globe or on the map? And yeah, it doesn't surface your restaurant recommendations. That's like completely
right. It was never actually useful for anything.
Only for stalking. So. Yeah. Well.
Only for stalking. I see Ben, our producer, saying Instagram is forcing reels on us really hard. True. I have never seen a good suggested reel. It's either girl in a bikini or somebody like doing something, you know, really wild. There's no usefulness there compared to I open up TikTok, right? And within 10 seconds, I flip to a short video of something cool or interesting. Man, they're just like so rushing to catch up. Yeah. Any other thoughts? I mean, Instagram feels like they want you to buy stuff. It feels like they want you to watch all the ads. The pictures of my friends feel so deprioritized. I don't even know why I open it sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, Instagram kind of sucks. I forgot to mention this, though, when we were talking about Galaxy Unpacked. Coming up also is OnePlus's next phone launch. The company announced this week that it will be unveiling the OnePlus 10T on August 3rd. So we have a lot to look forward to. I'm telling you, August, man, it's going to be phone season, phone summer. Expect all your phones to melt.
You know where I'm going to be in August?
Yeah, at home, bitch.
Not here. I'm taking the second half of my paternity leave in August, and it's usually I want to take it before iPhone season, before fall season. So it's like, you're on your own, Trillin. Good luck. Good luck with all.
I will have fun. I will have like a rotating cast of guest stars and friends. It'll be great. It'll be like a fun reunion. It'll be good.
It's always easy to get guests in August when everyone's on vacation.
We're all dying.
We're all dying. Let's move on to what we're working on. I finally got the Dell XPS 13 Plus. This is the like revamped, modernized XPS 13 with the like blended in trackpad and the capacitive function keys and the like modern design. It's cool. I'm working on my review. It is, I don't think it's as like a complete home run as the MacBook Air M2 was, which I adore that computer. Like I do love it. I don't throw perfect into a headline.
I was going to say.
Perfect. Willy-nilly. I think that computer is very good. Whereas this one, I have thoughts. I have questions. I think this trackpad, the fact that you cannot even feel, like, you can't look down, you can't feel the boundaries, you can't see it. You have to, like, just tap, tap, tap until you get it. I am misclicking right clicks and left clicks all over the place. And to me, that's annoying. And that is not a great user experience. So if you're doing that to me just because you want a nice, clean design, I don't know if I fully buy that. So yeah, keep an eye out for my review. That's going to be dropping next week. I also don't know how Dell can excuse not having a headphone jack on this thing when the MacBook Air M2 is even thinner and has a headphone jack. I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts here. What are you working on, Trillin?
I'm wondering if you're going to say perfecter than perfect in one of your headlines soon. But
I'm not going to use it anymore. It's done. And honestly, the MacBook Air M2, I cannot, until we get more perfect from Apple, I don't know how else I can use that word. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Phone season is on us. So there will be plenty happening there. Again, a lot of it I can't talk about. But I'm also, it might look like I'm doing less stuff, I guess, on my bylines, but I am doing more editing behind the scenes, so that's good. And the story that I've been working on for a bit, I might finally get it up this week. I feel like maybe it's coming. So we'll see. But around Engadget, our team has been doing some really interesting stuff too. We've got Steve Dent with a story on why Nikon and Canon have given up on DSLRs. Dev, what do you think?
Has Nikon confirmed this? I believe there was reporting. I think TechCrunch reported it, and then Nikon kind of refuted it. But anyway, Steve makes a good case for why these companies just aren't doing traditional DSLRs. Everybody's mirrorless right now, and I could see why. Like within 5 feet of me, I have my full frame Sony A7C, and that is a full frame camera that fits in my pocket.
Right,
it's just wild. Right. Just wild. It is as thin as their mirrorless stuff. So if we can do full frame mirrorless, you don't need straight up DSLRs anymore. Like, you don't need those big honking things. Makes more sense for these companies to focus on, the mirrorless, actual cinema cameras. That's actually a big thing too. Like, cameras for shooting professional video, because hey, if you're an aspiring YouTuber, you'll start with a mirrorless or something, but eventually you're going to get like a nice, beautiful studio camera type of deal. It makes more sense for them to focus on the future rather than old school DSLRs. Yeah.
I'm going to miss the sound and that clonk though of the mirrors, right?
It's a good sound. It's a good sound.
I love it. It's
a good sound. I would personally try to just get old film cameras instead, which also have good sounds. And those things are all over the place. I see people selling old film stock, like, hey, here's 50 rolls of Canon film,
there's a whole resurgence
or something.
Yeah Everyone's shooting film.
So to me, the tactility of that, if I'm gonna go digital, give me mirrorless, give me my phone, give me even point and shoots are still around. They're still a thing, not as much as they used to be, but still a thing. But give me, if I want tactility, give me an old school film camera. I don't know. Yeah, what else is going on around Engadget?
We, last week, sometime around the podcast going live, launched the Back to School Gift Guide. We've got lots of coverage on the things that you can buy someone going back to school, or, for yourself, if you're headed back to campus, the best laptops, the best, dorm needs, all of that stuff. It's been a team effort spearheaded by our senior commerce editor, Valentina Palladino. So, yeah, go check it out. Shopping's always
check
fun, even if in the midst of inflation. Mm-hmm.
And we all contribute to those guides. There's some good suggestions there. I do like, refreshing my my recommendations every year, too, because we are allowed to bring in all the new things we learned. Hey, here's the new hardware to look for. Look at, which companies are doing it better. Check out those guides. Super useful. I also get a lot of pings about what should I buy for school? Look at this guide, folks. This is what we were trying to help you with. Please. And okay, let's move on to our picks, our pop culture picks for the week. What do you got, Sherlyn?
I was happy to see this. It was a surprise to me. I saw this on my HBO Max and Hulu, the Bob's Burgers movie. It was a fun time, as always with Bob's Burgers. It's what, like a 90-minute-ish film featuring our favorite screwballs. They're, the art is nice. I don't even know what to tell you.
The animation is so good.
The animation is very nice.
It looks so good.
It randomly,
because,
like...
Because, yeah, they got a budget.
They they finally got a budget. Everything looks pristine. Like, not pristine because it is Bob's Burgers. But it looks like it's, like, just a new level. There's a sheen to everything. It looks, like, almost realistic, but not realistic. The writing is top-notch as always. The voice acting is amazing. I just love... I mean, Tina...
Good songs. It's great. Good
There's
songs,
actual songs. Yeah. They're very, like... And, like, they deadpan the songs, too. Like, that's one of my favorite things. There's a song with, like... is it Tina? The one with the ears. I forget. Crap. I'm so bad with their names. The little one. She, like, whenever she sings, it's like, I'm
Tina. Funny. Yeah, that's the other one.
Tina is the
other
one. Yeah. The boyfriend obsessed.
Louise.
One.
Louise.
Thank you, Louise. Yep. So Tina's my favorite. That's why. Like, I identify so hard with Tina. It's really weird.
Tina's really cool. I like, yeah. I like this. You know what? I was worried because it felt like it was going to be a Simpsons movie thing where. That movie came out when the show was far past its prime, and honestly, Bob's Burgers, the actual episodes, have been not as good as early Bob's Burgers. I'm going to have to pull that, like, animation nerd thing, but I'm glad the movie kind of has, like, the vibe and the humor and, like, you know, the sensibilities. I'm also happy to see, like, Lauren Bouchard. I've been watching his shows forever. Home Movies, Dr. Katz he was working on. All of his shows are, like, brilliant and don't go anywhere. You know, are get canceled. So I'm glad to see he is sort of like the spearheading the true successor to The Simpsons. And I'm glad it's not freaking Family Guy.
This is
his true successor to The Simpsons. Yeah.
I enjoy the jokes. I enjoy, like, Bob's Burgers a lot. Like you said, I think the recent episodes, I just haven't been paying attention. But I will say that, like, oh, crap. I forgot what I wanted to say.
Just sing it.
Oh, I would love to sing it. Are you letting me sing on our podcast? Oh my God.
I mean, I pitched the idea that we should try to do a news session.
We really need to. Okay, y'all. If you like the idea of us doing a musical podcast segment.
I can't sing.
Well, I'll invite Chris Velasco.
I'd be like H-Ron Benjamin as Bob, where he just, like, it's just his voice.
Yeah.
And it's still, like,
you can
very, very deep H-Ron Benjamin voice.
Rapping is just talking with rhythm. Uh-huh. Anyway, what I wanted to say was I've also just started to watch The Bear. It's like a last minute addition here.
So good.
It's a very anxiety inducing show for me. So but because Valentina, our again senior commerce editor, really really wanted me to watch it so we could squee together, I started watching it, and yeah, I hear a lot about it. It's great, but I can't.
Have you seen episode 7 yet?
Not yet, but she told me. Like, she gave me a heads up. She was like,
it's the one where it's like you just kind of have to strap in.
I think
because it's like a 20 minute.
Is that the one with single take? With the veal broth or something?
No, okay, that's early.
They've all don't worry, yeah. That's where I am. That's already
the bear is good. The bear is good, and also I think for the like heightened state of like just anxiety we're all living in right now, somehow the show just like hits right because of that too. So anyway, check out the bear. I got a couple of things. I have been playing Stray, the adorable like future cyberpunk cat game that we've been watching trailers of this forever. It's developed by Blue 12 Studio, produced, published by Annapurna Interactive. It is good. The cat game is good. I love it. It's really short from what I hear. I have so little time to play games. I was able to put like half an hour to an hour into this. You're just walking around as a cat. You have a button to meow. Press circle to meow. I love it. I love all of it. And also I play it with my speakers on. My two young cats who are now like a year old will like come and just be like, where? It sounds like there's a whole cat party in here. What's going on? So they sit here and stare at my speakers and my monitor. It's a good game. It's basically like it's kind of a puzzle and interactive game. It's not really an action game, but you play as a cat and the cat is adorable and more games should let you play as the cats. Please. Also, my thing, I want to shout out Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, the movie. Another, like, small screen thing turned into a big screen thing. Another thing I would also recommend to you, Sherlyn. I don't know if you've seen
so
Marcel
weird.
The Shell.
It looks so weird. Oh,
he's
my God.
He's the Shell. And he's voiced by Jenny Slate. He talks like this. He's like, I'm in the Shell. And I talk like this. And it will kill you with its cuteness. Jenny Slate. And Dean Fleischer Camp made these YouTube videos like a decade ago, right? And they got really popular. You can watch the original ones on YouTube right now. And it's just very sweet. It is technically, it's like a kid's movie for like 8 to 10 years old, but it's also so sweet and insightful, because Marcel is this poor lonely shell who's lost his entire family and has to live through the world and has like a whole philosophy and thoughts about the world. And it's just like super deep, super observant. And I think like the message of this movie is very, very sweet, how we can all kind of survive together. I saw this at a theater here in Georgia. Like, I had to drive a little far for it because it's only in some theaters. But I saw this dad go in, and it was like, he looked like he could be an extra on like a, you know, some sort of like tough guy gangster show. Like, he's a big guy with like a wife beater and tattoos and everything everywhere. And he had like a bunch, he had like three kids with him. And I saw him go up to the ticket counter and be like, four for Marcel the Shell, please. And he sat, and they ended up sitting right next to me. And by the end of this movie, when everybody was crying, because this movie will make you cry, I look over and his kids are just like curled up. This dude is just like, he is tearing up. He's trying to hold it in. I'm like, that is the power of Marcel the Shell. He will make you cry. And I believe in him. I love him. I think you will enjoy it too, Shirley. So I'd recommend it to everybody. It's going to be on VOD soon, probably.
Okay. Yeah. I have one question. Why is this thing flesh colored? Like, what does it look like?
He's a shell.
It's fleshy looking.
He has shoes.
And he has shoes.
He has one eye.
Yeah.
Why do you have questions?
One eye, green.
Just accept it.
Green lids for some reason. Uh-huh. Very flesh-colored, flesh-tone shell that looks like it's made of some kind of soft, fleshy clay.
It looks like a shell. Also, this is entirely or mostly motion capture, or not motion capture. It's a stop motion animation. So it looks like it has that herky jerky feel, but there's also like, they do some really cool stuff in terms of getting stop motion to work with live action people. It must have been really interesting to produce this movie too. So I can't wait to see some behind the scenes stuff. So shout out to that. And also RIP James Caan, the like tremendous actor. I just rewatched Thief. I did an episode of the film cast star like After Dark. This is one of the greatest movies ever made. James Caan is one of the greatest tough guy actors to ever play the part. If you've never seen Thief, you should watch Thief because it's a freaking perfect movie. So watch Thief. You can find it all over the place. You can rent on Vudu. You can watch it for free on Pluto and a bunch of things. But yeah, check out my full review of that over at the film cast. And yeah, that's it for me.
All right, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter. Also, you can find me on the latest episode of This Week in Tech. I guest hosted that for Leo Laporte, so check it out. It's at twit.tv. We had a great panel with Patrick Norton, Brianna Wu, and Norm Chan. So check it out. It was a lot of fun. Hope to do it again. And I love the Twit folks. So yeah, you can find me there. And I also do a movie TV podcast, The Filmcast, at thefilmcast.com. Where can we find you, Sherlon Musk?
Good Lord, no thank you. If you want to send me pictures of seashells that are definitely not flesh-colored or fleshy-looking, I am at Sherlon.
Don't talk like this.
On Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes so Devendra will shut up. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
And don't talk like this. Don't. It's a cute voice.